Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
From the John L. Santico Studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. It's been less than 24 hours, and the future of the nation has been upended. President Joe Biden ended his run for re-election and tapped his Vice President Kamala Harris as the pick to be the Democratic Party's nominee. In a few minutes, we're going to get reaction, open up the phone lines. But first, I spoke this morning with San Antonio Austin Democratic Congressman Greg Kassar about these developments.
President Biden has done exactly the right thing for the country. He has had such an incredible record as president. He saved our economy from COVID. He's tackled the challenges of inflation. He's taken on big corporations and stood up for workers. But it was time for him to pass the torch because he's a great president, but we need a stellar presidential candidate. And that's Vice President Kamala Harris, who I think is inspiring Democrats across the country right now to rally and beat Trump and start advancing new priorities for the country, like restoring abortion rights in Texas, like tackling the climate crisis, and like bringing about peace in some of these wars that we're seeing right now.
We're hearing from some of your Republican colleagues in the House saying that if Biden is not fit to run for president, then he is not fit to be president now. There are about 6 months left on his term as president. What's your reaction to that?
President Biden is and has been a great president. He has created unprecedented numbers of jobs, not just recovering from COVID, but actually bringing jobs back home from overseas. He has stood up to right-wing MAGA extremists, and he's fit to be president. But as we saw on the debate stage, he's not the best candidate for president. Those are different things. He absolutely should continue his great work as president, focus on that work, and then we can all support Vice President Kamala Harris in the forward-looking work of four more years to battle back against this extremist agenda. If we want to stop things that Trump wants to do in Project 2025, like gutting our checks and balances, taking out abortion rights even further in other parts of the country, then we need the strongest candidate we can have, and that's Kamala Harris.
Texas Senator Ted Cruz says what is happening shows the Democratic Party is in disarray and that it's in collapse, that the candidate, lead candidate, the nominee had to step down, and he is saying presumptive nominee now, Kamala Harris, is not fit to become the nominee. Can you react? Is the Democratic Party in disarray?
You know, here in Texas and in San Antonio, we like to try to be polite, so I'll put it in as polite of terms as we can. That is just an embarrassing statement from Ted Cruz. What this shows is that the Democratic Party is actually democratic and willing to have discussions, unlike the Ted Cruz version of the Republican Party, which has really become so cowardly and cultish. You see Ted Cruz immediately lining up to kiss the boots of Donald Trump, even after Donald Trump insulted him and insulted his wife. I mean, these folks that say that they are conservatives will just in the most embarrassing sorts of ways line up behind Trump no matter what he says. So it goes to show that, unfortunately and tragically, really, the Republican Party of today has become a cult of Donald Trump. Well, they'll accept him no matter what. Whereas inside the Democratic Party, we were willing to have a tough discussion. We are willing to have this real debate about who our candidate should be. I was in multiple meetings with the president having this very discussion, and we came out making the right choice. Let's have a strong president, continue being president, but then a stronger candidate and Kamala Harris take the torch and lead us into the future. So this really actually makes me very proud to be part of the Democratic Party. Before I was an elected official, I couldn't see behind the curtain. And now behind the curtain, you can see that there's real discussions where the president is doing a patriotic and difficult thing to do what's right for the country, and the Democratic Party is willing to rally around someone new, something the Republican Party would never do.
The Democratic Party will be having their convention in just a matter of days in Chicago. Will there be unity on the floor? What would it look like for the Democrats?
Just in the last 24 hours, the Progressive Caucus of the Democrats in Congress and the Moderate Caucus have both endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris. The Hispanic Caucus, as well as the Black Caucus, again, just in a matter of hours, all endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris to be our presidential nominee. And so there's so much energy right now in the Democratic Party. That's part of what President Biden gifted to the party and to the nation yesterday. You've seen record numbers of small grassroots donations, people chipping in $2, $3, $4, adding up to tens of millions of dollars for Vice President Kamala Harris to take on Donald Trump. I've heard from around the country that record numbers of volunteers are signing up to knock on doors. So there's real energy back in the Democratic Party right now.
During that Republican National Convention, there were signs saying deport them all, send them all back. That was a chant that was given. Texas Governor Greg Abbott was a part of that effort, saying to deport them all. What does that say to you and your constituents about the choice?
Look, we all know that Governor Greg Abbott is all hat and no cattle. I mean, the guy cannot actually believe that deporting all of these immigrants is going to be any good for Texas. We know that would destroy Texas's economy. We know that would destroy our classrooms. It would tear apart our neighborhoods. What he's trying to do is trying to distract people with this kind of hatred while trying to cover up for the fact that he failed us during Winter Storm Uri. He failed us summer after summer. Instead of funding our public schools, he's actually giving tax cuts to billionaires and big corporations and to his buddies like Elon Musk. So he wants to distract from that agenda by pointing the finger at poor and vulnerable people. And we just can't let that happen. So we have to have a strong counter message that lets people know we're going to reform the immigration system in a way that's order, legally, and safe. But we also recognize that immigrants add to places like Texas. They don't take away.
Now, what we've had over the past several weeks in the media, the news coverage of the Democratic Party has been mostly horse race politics. Is that going to end now? And will there be an opportunity to refocus on these issues? You mentioned Project 2025, threats in that project to cut Social Security, terminate women's rights, end access to contraception, targeting labor rights. It's just there's a lot in there that seems very unpopular with the vast majority of American people. Will there be an opportunity now to focus on the issues of this race?
If we focus on the difference in what Kamala Harris would do as president versus what Donald Trump would do as president, the American people would overwhelmingly choose President Harris and the Democratic agenda. Our agenda is about raising worker wages, about taxing billionaires in order to save and expand Social Security, expanding affordable health care, restoring abortion rights. Whereas the Donald Trump agenda, this Project 2025 stuff is medieval. It's scary and it's written down. They want to end checks and balances, concentrate powers inside of the presidency, replace civil servants with Trump lackeys, not only get rid of basic things like abortion rights and the abortion pill, they're talking about things like criminalizing pornography. I mean, like, come on, guys, they want to take us back decades, if not centuries. But the problem is, so often the conversation is about the horse race rather than what's happening in our neighborhoods in places like San Antonio, what's happening in our neighborhoods in the Rio Grande Valley or in Houston or in Austin. And if we talk about the actual impact to people's lives, that's the focus we need to have. And that's why I'm so excited to support Vice President Harris in pushing forward her agenda.
Greg Kassar is the congressman for the 35th Congressional District in Texas. That includes parts of San Antonio, Austin, and in between. More Source after this one-minute break. Stay with us.
Support for TPR comes from Jingu House in the Japanese Tea Garden, featuring Asian cuisine with a San Antonio twist. Open for lunch 7 days a week. View the menu at jinguhousesatx.com.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We are talking about the history-making bombshell that dropped less than 24 hours ago. President Joe Biden is out as the Democratic nominee, and Vice President Kamala Harris looks to be that nominee. And Donald Trump and his campaign seems to be caught flat-footed and crying foul about this development. Well, what do you think Will this change your vote? Do you think that this changes who will occupy the White House after Biden? We're joined by Gilbert Garcia. He is an opinion and Metro columnist for the San Antonio Express News. Gilbert, welcome back to The Source.
Thank you.
And Sanford Nolan is the editor-in-chief at the San Antonio Current. And Sanford, welcome to The Source.
Great to be here.
Great to have you back. So let me ask you, Gilbert, was this not a surprise? A surprise that wasn't a surprise? We knew this was going
to
happen?
Yeah, I think surprise that wasn't a surprise is probably the best way to describe it. Maybe the timing of it might have surprised people. But it started to feel inevitable over the 3.5 weeks since the presidential debate between Donald Trump and Joe Biden, where Joe Biden, I think everyone would agree, performed very poorly. There was a slow drip of questions about his mental acuity, about whether he could mount a successful campaign, and he had some leading Democrats either privately or publicly telling him to step down. He was struggling to raise any money, and so I think that there just wasn't really going to be a path forward for him.
And Sanford, did you see, was this a surprise? Were you expecting this to happen?
No, I mean, I feel similar to Gilbert about this. I mean, if you've been paying attention to social media or, talking to voters, I think I've seen a lot of people, even before the debate, saying, wow, I wish there was another choice. It seems like we've got somebody who's diminishing versus somebody who's a convicted felon, and I don't know that I feel really strongly about either one, you know?
So we're going to see if our phone lines, the number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you got a question, a comment, you want to weigh in, does this change your vote in one way or the other? Do you think that this process has been transparent enough? Give us a call, 833-877-8255. And so people have wondered, though, Gilbert, if this was, we had the debate, as we said, and we had Biden's performance, and he seemed like he was not able to respond to Donald Trump's, his flurry of falsehoods that he was presenting, and that's been documented. It's not a political statement. He said things that were demonstrably false. So Biden was just like, how do you respond to a guy like that? And so. Should this have happened earlier? Why wait so long?
Well, I think that Democrats had been concerned. I think voters in general had been concerned. There had been polling indicating that people didn't want a rematch of these two candidates, an 81-year-old candidate versus a 78-year-old candidate. But the reason that the Biden campaign sought out this debate unusually early, we don't have general election presidential debates in June. I mean, they're usually in September and October. So Biden was trying to kind of flip the narrative on whether he was up for the job and up for the campaign. And of course, it backfired, horribly. But after that, I mean, I think that really, I think there was that sense among Democrats. What happens in a lot of these cases is there's the debate itself, and then there's the coverage of the debate. And the debate was seen by a lot of people. Millions of people saw it, and it certainly had a bad effect. But I think that the coverage of it and the media fixation on how bad he was, even people who didn't watch it probably had learned that he performed badly.
Well,
I think part of it too is, if you look at Biden over his political career, he has been a very good debater. Right. I mean, I remember there was the prediction when he was debating Paul Ryan that he was going to be eviscerated and Paul Ryan was this wonk and, Joe Biden only spoke in generalities, and it turned out to go the other way. And same thing when he debated Trump in 2020. Would you just shut up, man? That was probably the most memorable line from those debates.
Right, but the Sarah Palin, he seemed like he was really, I think he lost that debate against Sarah Palin. She came away with more sparkle than Trump did.
Yeah, I think on that one, Biden probably maybe on substance won it. But yeah, I think as far as the way she kind of played to the viewers, it worked for her.
And so with the debate performance, what did people really see? Did they see a person who has age-related cognitive decline, or was that really the issue? We've seen a lot of these armchair diagnoses, and then they decided, he's just not capable of winning this election, and the fact that the stakes are so high in this election, we're no longer talking about is it a choice between you know, Romney versus Obama, which, you know, there was the choice between two sane people who worked to try to provide the best country we could possibly have, just different policies to get there. But now we have a view that that Trump is he's a horse of a different color, Gilbert.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was part of the concern for Democrats that, you know, we haven't had a political phenomenon like Donald Trump, what we've seen from him in the last 9 years. And it takes a certain level of discipline and sharpness to really catch him in his lies, to really point out the dangers that he poses to our society. And Biden's struggle. At one point, he said something about how we've done away with Medicare or something. I think he
won the war. He beat Medicare.
The Medicare, and obviously that was a misstatement. But we won't know really what Biden's maybe for a long time, if ever. You know what Biden's condition is, and it's very possible that he's just an 81-year-old person who is slowed down, as many of us have had relatives where you see that happening. But I think that he was not quick enough, I think, in the debate, and really in any of his interviews, I think he does not seem like quick enough to be able to meet the demands of prosecuting the case against Donald Trump.
And the other thing is too, you have to remember, like when we're talking about this stuff and we're peeling back layers of the onion and talking about facts and figures and whatnot, that's not necessarily the way a lot of people make decisions about who they vote for. And if the appearance is there that he's a weakened, you know, a weakened leader, whether he really has cognitive decline or he just had a bad day and was exhausted, as he says he was, people can see him moving slower. People can see him, you know, calling Zelensky President Putin, and they see things like that, and they wonder, is he up to the task? Is he going to be able to lead? I mean, I think a lot of what motivates voters is a gut reaction, and I think there was enough there to give people pause.
I was going to say that, you know, that I mean, there were two issues here. One is, could he handle the campaign? And two, what state would he be in a second term at the age of 85, 86? He would be 86 by the time a second term went in. And I think Democrats were, you know, probably felt, at least as of now, he can handle the job. His energy level might not be what it was, but he can handle the job, and he's got good people around him. I think their concern was, we're losing this election, and there's really no, when you looked at it, it was hard to see, how are you going to turn things around? How are you, what are you going to be able to do now that certain narratives have really kind of been cemented?
And but the response for some people has been, I want to make the point, though, to the thing about calling Zelensky Putin. I mean, he said the wrong name, but he didn't actually think it was Putin.
No.
And I don't think we can say the same thing about Trump. You know, he has his own issues and cognitive abilities, and he seems that he has a problem dealing with actual reality. I don't know if the stuff he says
is... I think that's going to be interesting to watch. I mean, if Kamala Harris is, in fact, the nominee, I think she's going to be able to prosecute that case in a way that I think Biden would not be able to.
We're going to play a clip here. This is from Man on the Street reporting that our producer, Kayla Padilla, was able to gather. Let's give a listen to clip number one.
I really don't know, because, like, easy answer, Kamala Harris... But that's just a different flavor of Biden's exact politics. So it's just very, like, if there was more space for people who weren't so old to actually, you know, like, be in that place, I think it would just be better in general for everybody.
All right. So I don't know if that's good or bad to say that Kamala Harris is the same policies that Biden. It's just a different person, because his policies have been very effective, you know, restoring the economy, dealing on the international stage, dealing with climate change, a lot of these other issues. But the person who was interviewed, the man on the street, you know, saying about age. So Kamala Harris is 59 years old. I don't know if there's a different, you know, that's not old in politics, you know, particularly, but it seems, I don't know. You get your reaction to that, Sanford, at the San Antonio Current, you seem to have a younger demographic that you cater to.
Well, I'm probably closer to Kamala's age than I am to many of our readers. But, you know, I think that's one of the things she's going to have to overcome, and one of the cases she's going to have to make. And I don't think it's going to be that difficult once people see her in action to differentiate her between Biden age-wise, and I think part of it too is I think she's spent so much time as VP in his shadow that a lot of people haven't seen her in action, and I think that may change when you get her out there on, you know, in front of the camera all the time.
And you made the point about Biden's legislative accomplishments, and it's one of the sort of peculiarities of our sort of political moment that Biden, who I think will be regarded pretty highly by historians, and has had more legislative accomplishments than any president since Lyndon Johnson. And we've got an economy that's just doing extremely well, but it just never really translated into popularity for him. It just, for whatever reason, he never really got the benefit of that.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that would behoove, you know, Harris or whoever picks up the mantle here would be to point out that if people are worried about pocketbook issues and the economy and inflation, and that's something that the Trump campaign keeps going back to is inflation, Donald Trump's policies, such as, you know, protectionism,
yep,
you know, his claim that he's going to, you know, have this mass deportation, those are the things that cause inflation. Any economist will tell you once you start throwing, you know, low-wage laborers out of the country that are doing jobs nobody else wants to do, and once you start enacting these tariffs on everything you can imagine, those are the things that are going to drive inflation straight back up.
Also, artificially lowering interest rates will drive interest.
Yeah.
Will drive, because you have to do it at the right time, with the right way. It takes a lot of discipline, and I don't think Trump can be trusted with his hand on the till doing that. But, you know, this claim that that Harris is basically going to be Biden, his policies. Do we know that for sure? I mean, is there a lot of distinction between the two? What's Harris been like, you know, historically?
I don't think there are going to be big distinctions when it comes to their views on these policies. I think it's going to be more about emphasis. She has been, I think, probably one of the politicians in this country who has spoken out against the repeal of Roe v. Wade more than almost anyone out there, and done it very well. And not to say that Joe Biden didn't talk about it, but I think this is something that she's going to put more emphasis on. And I think everybody agrees that this is a winning issue for Democrats. Republicans, I think, agree with that because they've been kind of downplaying their opposition to abortion for the past several months. So I think it'll be that. That's what I don't know that there'll be big differences. I think how she deals with immigration is going to be very interesting because she was kind of seen as the point person for immigration in that administration and probably got some criticism early on. And I think what she articulates on that will be really interesting to watch.
Do you have anything on that?
Yeah, no, I agree wholeheartedly on the abortion issue. I think she's going to, that's going to be one of the strongest cards she can play. And I think she's one of the people you would want to make that case.
But I think when we call it the abortion issue, it's become even wider than that, particularly with Project 2025 threatening to outlaw access to contraception, trying to eliminate, no-fault divorce, also put in the Comstock Act, which would outlaw the mailing of abortion material, including information about it. So it can be broadened and to become a very real, scary set of policies that many, many people will react to, say, well, I don't have to worry about abortion, but yep, what about everything else that's included? Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break here. It doesn't look like our phones are working. So I'm going to give you my cell phone number. And you can call me on my cell phone, and I will put it on speaker, and I will hold it to the microphone because I want to hear what our listeners got to say about this. It's 210-288-7876. 210-288-7876. Call me on my cell phone. I've got it right here next to me on silent, hopefully. And call in, and we will get you on the air. We want your hot takes on what's going on with our future in this country. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We've been having a lot of technical issues with our phones. Listeners might recognize that. But anyway, today I cannot stand by and tolerate that. I gave out my cell phone number. I'm going to just use this to try and get people on the air because we got to hear what you got to say. The interaction is a really important part of what of our philosophy here. My cell phone number is 210-288-7876. I do have Al Ortiz right now on my phone. And Al, go ahead. Tell me what you, what you think about what's happening with Trump and with Biden and Harris.
So regardless if Biden was going to stay in the game or not, I was going to vote Democrat for the simple reason is that democracy is on the line. And I'm proud of President Biden for making his decision. That was a hard decision for him to do, but I think he made the right decision. And I am supporting the Democratic ticket all the way. Thank you.
All right, Al, thank you for the call. We appreciate that. Okay, and again, if you want to call in, we want to hear from you. Has your vote changed? Do you feel different now? Give us a call. And the number, let's go to another caller here. I'm just doing this blind here, okay? Because this is low tech, I guess. All right, so caller, hey, what's your name and yes. what's your take?
My name is Maria. Can right. you hear me?
Yes, you sound great.
Yeah, and I want to say that Biden is a patriot. I wouldn't expect any less of him than to think of the country even at his own peril. And the United States, we've never been a country that respects older people or aging. We're a young country, and we think we're never going to get old, even though you have a large number of people aging. So I will say that about Biden, and I respect him and his decision. Second, I believe that all the talk about mental stability, I don't think the press says enough about the instability of Trump. He doesn't know reality from truth. He continuously lies. He fabricates. Someone should be talking about his mental capability, and he's very narcissistic. So I'm right. very concerned to have a leader that is really all about himself, nothing about the country. And talk about someone that doesn't understand our Constitution, doesn't understand geography, etc.
right.
And so, you know, I'm just, right. I'm, you know, I think Kamala Harris will be a breath of fresh air, and right. she will be able to debate him.
Maria, thank you so much for that. So real quickly to that one point that she brought up, there's several good points. One of them is about aging in America. I mean, do we have a bias towards, was that part of this? Or was this just really, you know, when we're talking about the president of the United States here, right. whoever gets that job needs to be able to perform, you know, at a high level, right?
Yeah, and I mean, the oldest president we had had before was Reagan, who was nearly 78 when he left office, and there were questions about his state, and later
I don't even think there were questions.
Yeah. I mean, I happened to be in the Oval Office when Reagan was in there as a reporter, and he was not all there.
Yeah.
But this was in his final days in office there. Okay, so, but the other point that she made about of Trump's mental abilities and his acuity and his, do you think, Sanford, that this change, getting Biden has stepped aside, now there's say, well, what about Trump, and does that put it on him?
I do think it does, yeah. And here's the other thing I think that nobody, well, I shouldn't say nobody's talked about, but I do think there's a lot of excitement built into having a new candidate come in and try to close the deal. You know, I think that's the intangible thing is having somebody that can motivate those voters that were on the fence about Biden or feeling like, well, this is a lesser of two evils. And I think that more than anything is
going to happen. So now maybe that goes under the microscope. Okay, so caller, like I'm doing this blind. What's your name and what's your take?
Michael, this is Michael calling. I think the president should have stayed in the race. I think this shows that the moneyed interest has too much power in our country. The president was adamant about staying in the race until the donors told him they were going to pull the money out. And I really think he should have kept going because his administration would have been able to have continued. And also Vice President Harris would have been able to take over should she need to. Thank you.
All right, Michael, thank you for that call. Appreciate it. So get your response to that, Gilbert Garcia.
You know, I think he was pressured. I mean, it was also Democratic leaders, and you know, they're worried about losing the Senate. They're worried about losing some seats in the U.S. House. So, you know, Joe Biden. I went back recently with this.
Thank you, David.
All this happening, I went back and looked at this book by Richard Ben Cramer from the late on the 1980 presidential race, Biden, he was facing allegations of plagiarism.
Right. Well, he did.
And that he'd exaggerated his law school record. So he pulled out of the race. But when you go back and read that, he had decided to pull out of the race. And then he goes home to Delaware and he talks with his sons, Hunter and Beau, and they're telling him, no, you can't do this. You got to stay in. And he changed his mind temporarily.
Right.
So it's very hard, I think, for Joe Biden. I think everything in him is to want to keep fighting.
All right. I'm going to go to another caller. We have Ruben. Ruben, are you there, Ruben?
Yes, I am, David.
All right. You're on the air.
Thank you, David. Great show, by the way. Listen, this selfless act of President Biden, clearly he's looking at what is in the best interest of the country. This is why he's done that. He's moved aside. We want to make sure of one thing, and I think every American needs to consider this. Democracy is at stake. And of course, we're way past due with a woman president. Absolutely. It is time for a woman president, regardless of the race.
Right.
One of the things that we need to do is make sure that we keep this idiot of Trump away from the presidency. So let's all vote. And let's make sure that we go to the voting date and vote Democratic.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. Let's talk about the gender issue as something that could be a motivating factor, Sanford. Will that be something that gives Kamala Harris more energy, more juice in her campaign to win the White House that Biden didn't have?
Anecdotally, I would say yes. I have talked to a number of people who seem to be much more excited about her than they were about Biden. And I think it comes down to, you know, having that first. It comes down to her gender. And I also think it comes down to just having a fresh face in the race.
And so Gober Garcia, Republicans are saying if Biden couldn't be a good candidate for president, then he shouldn't be president right now. About 6 months left in his term as president. What's the response?
I mean, it really doesn't make any sense. I mean, Lyndon Johnson pulled out of the 1968 race and remained in office for the next 10 months. I mean, granted, Joe Biden is quite a bit older than Lyndon Johnson was, but I don't think Joe Biden's withdrawal from the race is an admission by him that he can't do the job. I don't think he's ever said that. I don't think he believes that. And so he's looking at it politically and thinking, I think, probably the way Lyndon Johnson did, that this was becoming an untenable situation on the political side, and he had to step down.
All right, back to the phone. My number is 210-288-7876. And caller, you're on the air. What's your name and what's your take?
My name's Rudy. I'm a young Gen Z voter. I'm 22. And I'm going to be blunt. Biden has not been doing a great job in engaging younger voters, especially after the last debate. And I think it's good that he stepped aside. And from what I'm seeing, it's looking like a lot of people have buzzed towards Harris. But even then, this administration hasn't exactly had the greatest policies in when it comes to young people's interests.
Well, what policies? I mean, the student loan debt, trying to change the climate.
Student loan debt, the climate crisis. I believe a more niche topic that a lot of people have had an issue with is FAFSA this year. Was disastrous rollout, foreign policy, lots of issues. And I think Harris has a clean slate that she can probably start with, maybe differentiate herself in several ways, but it's going to be a challenge.
So when you say foreign policy, do you mean the Palestinian-Israel conflict?
I'm going to be honest.
All right. I just wanted, let everyone know exactly what you mean there. So let me get a reaction from our panel. But thanks for calling in. Appreciate that.
All right. Thank you.
So, young Gen Z voters, it's going to be vital to get them to turn out for the polls, and just as a healthy country, we want to appeal to them, part of the coalition. So, Sanford, you're the guy who writes the current,
I do see. There has been a lot of disappointment from progressives on the Biden administration when it comes to the Israel-Gaza issue. I mean, it's out there, and I know it's probably the polling shows it's an important issue, a very important issue to a small but very vocal group, and they skew young, I think. Harris, again, this is a chance to press reset and for her to come at this without the baggage of Biden's years of sort of, you know, his take on that particular part of the world. But I don't think that's the only thing, as the caller points out. I mean, I think on climate change, I'm not sure Biden was necessarily selling that as energetically as he could. I think there are a lot of ways she could go out there and get younger voters energized.
And yeah,
I was telling that. I mean, probably the biggest climate change legislation that's ever been signed into law in this country was dubbed by Democrats the Inflation Reduction Act, because they knew that was going to be a better way to frame it politically. But part of that was that many voters didn't realize what impact this had on.
But still, I mean, we need to declare that this is a climate emergency. Sure. And maybe Harris will be the person to do that. But we're going to take a break here. I still want to hear more from the clips that we have from our Man on the Street reporting. We've got some really good stuff there. And also, we'll go back to the phones. I have Sydney here. I'll get you on right when we come back from this 1 minute break, Sydney. So hang on. Stand by. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With me in the studio, Gilbert Garcia, San Antonio Express News, Sanford Nolan. He is the editor-in-chief at the San Antonio Current. And we're making do because our phone lines are kind of goobered right now, so I'm using my cell phone to get your takes on the air, 210-288-7876. And we have Sydney here. And Sydney, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm also a Gen Z voter, like the previous caller. And something me and my fellow peers who are also politically active, one of our concerns is Kamala's record as a prosecutor in California, and she was seen as kind of overzealous, and I mean, there's still people behind bars that she sentenced, and yeah, that's one of our concerns.
All right, Cindy, appreciate that. Thank you so much. So Gilbert, do you want to take that?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, really throughout her her political career or subsequent to that, she has gotten criticism about it. And I mean, it's kind of a it kind of cuts both ways, because I think that there are probably some independent and swing voters who might be attracted to her if they think that she's someone who is tough on crime. But, you know, she had a record of prosecuting drug offenses and so on. And I think this is among progressives, there's, I think, been a lot of criticism over the years.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. But at some point, I think progressives have to look at the choice between the two candidates and say, you know, would you rather have somebody who was overzealous in terms of putting drug offenders away, or are you going to vote for somebody who's going to continue to put a much more rightward slant on the Supreme Court than it already is, and somebody who is pledged to engage in these mass deportations that are going to be, you know, chaos? Yeah.
All right, let's listen to another clip that we have from our reporting, from Man on the Street reporting. Go ahead.
That was one of the most selfless acts that he could do. He understands that staying in the race is going to jeopardize the Democratic ticket, and his goal is for the country not to have Trump as president again, and it was pretty selfless of him to step down. So I was very happy to see that.
Did you vote for Biden in 20?
Yes.
Okay.
Real quick, Gilbert, so we get to another caller. But do you think this amount of appreciation and saying that this is a historic thing and how brave Biden was to, in order to do this, comparing it to George Washington stepping down after two terms, is that going to last? Is that just something that's part of the moment, or, you know, after the convention, after we look at this from a historic perspective, we'll realize basically he had no choice?
Yeah, I do think over time people will realize that, you know, as you say, he didn't have much choice. He was really pushed. He didn't want to do it. He was angry by all accounts about the pressure he was feeling. And but nonetheless, he could have hung in there. He had the delegates. They couldn't really stop him. It would have been a very awkward convention, because you had people like Nancy Pelosi who had reached the point where she was not even wanting to mention the nominee by name. It was going to be awkward. I think now he's going to get his flowers at the convention and going to get the kind of send-off that he probably deserves if you look at his career, 36 years in the Senate, and what he's done as president. And I think it will alter his legacy, because he was the person who took Donald Trump out of office. Now he will not be seen as the person who allowed Trump to get back in.
All right, let's roll the dice again with another nameless caller on my cell phone. And go ahead, you're on the air. Who are you? What's your take?
Hi, this is Edward. I'm a younger, but a millennial, not Zoomer, but millennial swing voter, quite frankly. I'm the voter that either party needs to win. Honestly, like, these talking points that are right out of the Democratic Party and via cable news, et cetera, is all I'm hearing today. And it's not, honestly, our greatest concern. Our greatest concern is our purchasing power is 83% less than our parents. We can't buy homes. We can barely afford to live compared to previous generations. There's no pathway to the American dream anymore. The Democrats aren't talking about that. They're part of the problem. They helped create this along with the Republicans. Trump's a symptom. He's not the actual problem. And unfortunately, all I'm hearing out of the panel and show today is not, I'm not saying this is the truth. I'm saying what it feels like. And that's what matters.
Well, it's right? This true. You're absolutely true. What you're saying is absolutely correct. And it is, as I tell everyone, the most important real estate that we have is the kitchen table. And some people don't even have a kitchen table. So
right. what it feels like, and that's what's going to get people voting one way or the other, right? It feels like we've been gaslit, and it's continuing.
Well,
all right. So how are you voting? Do you have an idea? You're still up in the air.
Here in Texas, there's no reason to vote for a Democrat president anyway. I'll vote third party. I haven't decided which.
All right. Well, good luck to you. Thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate you trying to keep us in reality. Appreciate that. Thank you. And so, Sanford, your reaction to that?
Yeah. I mean, I hear that a lot, actually. I have younger friends who are are roughly the same age I was when I was able to buy a house, who aren't able to save and buy a house. I talk to young folks who, accrued way more debt to go to college than I ever did, and are working a job for $35,000 an hour, $35,000 a year, saying, how am I ever going to, make it through this? And I think it would behoove Harris or whoever,
to talk about this real issue about.
And that's the sad thing, I think. From the perspective of a lot of Democratic voters, it has to be, that Trump is at least acknowledging it. His solutions make no sense if you talk to anybody who knows what's going on economically. And in fact, they're probably going to hurt people at the bottom economically. But he continues to sort of bring these things up. And that's why I think he's had the appeal, in the industrial Midwest and places like that.
And so, Gilbert?
I was going to say that, one of the things about the economy is, when we've had incredible job creation, we've had great economic growth the last 3.5 years, but when unemployment goes down, it maybe affects 2-3% of the people, maybe some of their family members as well. But when inflation is high, it hits everybody. And so I think inflation is always, if you talk about domestic issues, it's always going to be the one that's going to register the most with people. We came out of COVID, and that was a problem. The rest of the world also had high inflation. The U.S., it's getting better, but that's definitely going to be a problem for the Democrats.
All right, let's go to another clip from our man on the street reporting.
Given the state of his, he seemed to be deteriorating. I mean, I feel bad because I was for him 120%. But, right now, we can't afford to lose.
And so who do you think should run in his place at the top of the Democratic ticket?
Well, I like the vice president. Mm-hmm. I will support her, whoever it is. I could go for even our governor, Jim Pritzker, or California's governor.
So anyone
Gavin
but Trump?
Anyone, yes. But we need young. We need young blood. We need to get them in so that we can ensure we can win. because right now it's frightening to what the heck is going on in this country. It's scary as heck.
So, Gilbert Garcia, the Republican Party, they were caught flat-footed. They should have been prepared. They had a playbook ready to go once this came about. It seems like they were screaming and hollering. They're calling this a coup and saying it's unfair. This isn't, you know, they're trying to rile up now Democrats to make them feel like, hey, you voted for Biden and now he's not the nominee. You should be mad. So is that a tactic that's going to work? They're going to try to shave off some Democrats because of this process.
There's some resentment maybe among some Biden voters. But, you know, the thing about it is that Biden didn't really, yes, he won the Democratic primaries, but he didn't really have serious challengers because people stayed out. As generally happens, serious candidates generally stay out if you've got an incumbent president in your party. And so I think a lot of Democrats were privately worried a year ago when he decided to run again, but they were not going to challenge him. And so I don't think that the primary results are the best demonstration of what Democrats are thinking.
Yeah, and there has been polling leading up to this where they've asked Democrats, you know, who would you support? And overwhelmingly, it's been Kamala Harris, right? Mm-hmm. And the other thing, too, that I think is interesting is if you look at some of the polling that where basically was put up as a hypothetical matchup between her and Trump, she doesn't perform great in some swing states, but in Pennsylvania and Virginia, both of which are going to be very significant, she polls better than Biden in a hypothetical matchup against Donald Trump. Now, the thing that's interesting about hypothetical matchups, if you talk to pollsters, they'll say very often when you present the question as a real matchup between somebody, the numbers get even further up. So,
but she hasn't been campaigning yet. So, as she becomes more of a commodity, and there's money behind her, and those ads roll out, things could change. But so, as we're approaching the end of our time, but Gilbert Garcia, Donald Trump is basically looking like he's going to be frozen out of the news cycle for the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Right.
As we get towards the Democratic National Convention, there's all this now speculation about who's going to be the VP, what's going to happen at the convention. Can Donald Trump, you know, stand the fact that he's not going to be in the spotlight? Should we expect him to do something unexpected?
He could. One thing I noticed is after the debate with Biden, he kept a relatively low profile. It almost felt like people around him were telling him, just let this thing play out. And I don't know if he's going to be able to do that now.
Anything?
Yeah. In fact, I was actually reading a column by Amy Walter this morning, and she was talking about a lot of Democrats are saying that very thing, and they're also thinking that Trump is going to be rattled running against a younger woman of color.
Because now he looks more like he actually is.
Yeah. I mean, the contrast is going to be marked, and what he does and what he says is going to be something people know.
Sanford Nolan is the editor-in-chief at the San Antonio Current. Gilbert Garcia is the opinion and Metro columnist for the San Antonio Express News. Thank you so much on this historic day as we try to make sense of American politics. Appreciate that. And thanks, callers and listeners, and thanks for listening to The Source. Thank you.
Been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.